This is the Sunshine State, so doesn't solar power make sense? Then why does it make up only a tiny fraction of Florida's electricity output? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Today on Florida Matters, we're talking about the promise and the prognosis of renewable energy in Florida. Joining us in the studio today are Dr. Ralph Fair, a power systems expert and electrical engineering instructor at the University of South Florida, Susan Glickman, the Florida director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and Dr. Rick Garrity, former director of the Hillsborough County Environmental Protection Commission, now the chair of the Hillsborough League of Women Voters Natural Resource Committee. But first, a new report says Florida is leading the nation in solar permits for homes. Florida Matters reporter Steve Newborn looks at why residential solar power is becoming more popular, as well as two new co-ops being formed to take advantage of the power of group buying.
Dan Harmon pounds away on Frank Moore's roof in Temple Terrace, installing a solar panel to heat his water system.
So this is a solar hot water heater for, you know, the potable water system for their house supply. So it's a really good way to get hot water in an energy-efficient manner that's clean and good for the environment.
He fastens on the solar panel, which contains copper pipe painted black to absorb the sun's rays. He then drills a 1-inch hole into the roof for the water pipe. Greg Glover is operations officer with Tampa Bay Solar, which has previously installed a series of panels to power Moore's home.
You can see several panels on this roof. They're panels that we installed a few years ago, and it's been working great. 26 panels on this roof.
And how much juice does that put out?
That's about 7 kilowatts.
That's more than enough to power a home. Moore climbs a ladder to check out the progress. He liked the photovoltaic system so much, he decided to power his water heater with the sun.
My electric bill had been running close to $200 a month, sometimes more, sometimes less. And I've had electric bills as low as $30.
He does have one problem, though. During the time he needs the power the most, like during the recent hurricane when he lost electricity, he can't just switch on his solar.
The only drawback I have is when TECO drops off for some reason, and it's in the daytime, I'm not really allowed to use much of the solar that I generate. They say it's a safety issue. People out on the line working can't hear generators running. They can't hear your solar running. And if for some reason it backfeeds into the grid, it could kill somebody.
So let me get this straight. The one time where you need it the most, when you get no power, for instance, you can't use the solar.
Not in the daytime, no.
He's allowed to use only an emergency outlet from his solar panels, enough to power his refrigerator and fans. But people like Moore will soon have a new and possibly cheaper way to power their homes with the sun. Co-ops are being formed in Hillsborough County and Northern Pinellas County by the League of Women Voters and Solar United Neighbors. The co-ops lower prices by using competitive bidding to attract solar power installers. Rick Garrity used to head Hillsborough's Environmental Protection Commission. He now volunteers with the League, which has been planning for a year to start a solar co-op in Hillsborough.
The price of solar panels has come down 65% in the last 5 years. You can get a 30% tax credit on it and another 20% savings through the co-op. It doesn't make sense not to think about going solar. This is the time to do it.
He says there's a set price the installer gives to the cooperative with adjustments depending on each house. They limit the sign-up period to 3 months, and each co-op is capped at about 200 people.
In Orange County, they've done this like 4 or 5 times. The first time was so successful, they just kept doing launches over and over again. So they have hundreds and hundreds of people signed up.
Angela DeMonbrun is Florida Program Director for Solar United Neighbors.
One co-op goes, installations start happening, and then the neighbors start asking questions. Hey, I want to learn more about solar. And then those neighbors come together. It's a grassroots, volunteer-driven effort.
DeMonbrun says there's a good reason why solar is finally booming in Florida.
I think the top one historically has been an environmental reason, but the economics now, the payback period, they're guaranteed for 25 years to keep producing, but now you have a payoff period of 5, maybe just even 10 years, as well as energy costs keep rising.
And there's one more reason why people like Frank Moore are switching to solar.
It's mostly the dollars.
For Florida Matters, I'm Steve Newborn.
So Dr. Ralph Fair is a power systems expert and electrical engineering instructor at the University of South Florida. Ralph, in Steve's story, Angela de Monbrun, she's with Solar United Neighbors, says energy costs keep rising, but they're actually pretty low right now. But solar's able to compete anyway, right?
Well, they are. Energy prices have stabilized quite a bit in recent years, but the cost of solar technologies has dropped considerably, and that's making solar a much more competitive option now than it was just a few years back.
Okay, so in Florida, here's some statistics. Natural gas accounts for the lion's share of Florida's power generation, about 61%. Coal counts for almost 23%, and the state's nuclear power plants account for about 12%. Renewable energy contributes just a little over 2% of Florida's total net electricity generation, but it takes up a much bigger percentage of the conversation about electricity and at least the political conversation. It also fires the imagination. Susan Glickman, why is renewable energy and solar such a small part of our power portfolio right now?
Well, it really is a political conversation because the big monopoly utility companies in the state of Florida, and they represent about 75% of the state, are very big political players. And our policies have been such that renewables and solar have not really flourished. So you mentioned 2% renewables. It's actually for solar only 0.36% in the entire state of Florida. We have less than 16,000 net metered systems out of a possible 10 million electricity customers because policy has been such that it did not encourage solar. The big monopoly utility companies get a guaranteed range of a return on their capital expenditure. So the incentive is on building power plants. And you mentioned the electricity mix. We have a serious over-reliance on natural gas at 62%. And the largest utility in the state, Florida Power and Light, they are closer to 70% natural gas. And the utilities are looking to build more new natural gas plants. And while the natural gas prices have come down recently because of the hydraulic fracturing, there are some concerns about the environmental aspects of fracking, as it's known. But those prices have historically been volatile. So we don't know that they won't come up. And then, as you said, the cost of solar has come down.
Right. And it's probably volatile as well. All of these prices seem to be go up and down. But Dr. Rick Garrity, what's wrong with natural gas? As Susan was saying, it's a big, big part of the portfolio right now. It's known as a cleaner energy, low emission sort of. You don't see the big black plumes coming from there. What's wrong with having natural gas?
Well, at one point, we were very happy to see natural gas because it was replacing coal.
Right.
So the pollution, like at TECO's Gannon Station, went down over 90%, 95% for mercury when they switched from coal to natural gas. But now we're looking at the source of natural gas, which is fracking, which itself is an environmental problem. And then you're talking about bringing natural gas to Florida through pipelines hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles away. When you can look at solar, you can make solar right in your backyard. And I think the power companies are finally coming to realize that solar power is competitive price-wise with the other sources of fuel that they have been looking at. And they are actually now thinking, TECO, in fact, is thinking about producing 600 megawatts of solar power in the near future and coming up from a very low percentage allocated to solar to something like between 5% and 7% of their base will be solar powered.
Mm-hmm. Rick, tell us a little bit more about the solar co-ops that we heard about in Steve's story.
The way I explain it is that if you went to buy a car at an auto dealer, you said you wanted one car, particular type, and they're going to give you a price. But if you went back to that dealer and said you wanted 300 cars, they're probably going to take you out to dinner and give you a much better price.
So the installer gives a better price because a bunch of people go in on it. Well, you said the prices came down 65%. Is it because of the the bulk buying?
No, I think that's more because of the price of the panels mm-hmm. has come down. The technology has improved to such a great degree that now we're trying to just take advantage of that. You have the decrease in the price of the panels. You have the tax credit, which is still 30%, but that's scheduled to go away in mm-hmm. a couple of years. And then you have the incentive of the co-ops for this. So this is the exact right time for homeowners to think about going solar.
So tell me how much it would cost. I just like say for a 2,500 square foot house, and you're talking about being in one of these co-ops, how much are you talking about spending?
Well, if you're talking a house that uses around, let's say, 8 kilowatts, which may be around the 2,500 square foot house, you may be talking in the range of $16,000 or something like
that. In that neighborhood,
yes.
$16,000. And then you have panels that just kind of line your roof. Is that what it looks like?
Yes, you have a lot of panels. You mm-hmm. may have 24 up to 40 panels on some homes. But the gross price that the installer will give you then is reduced by the fact that you've joined a cooperative. You're getting between a 10 and 20% break in the price because you're part of the cooperative. All of that brings the price down. You're going to be reducing that by the tax credit and by the 20% break from the installer to a much lower figure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with all these power outages from Hurricane Irma fresh in our minds, people are wondering, if I had solar panels on my roof, would that have made sure that I didn't lose power, Ralph?
Well, that depends. It depends on the design of the system. As was mentioned earlier, it's a major safety issue having generation on the distribution system. You have to realize that the power distribution system has been around for over 100 years, and it was never designed to have generation as part of it. It was intended to move electricity from a source of generation through a substation to a customer.
One way.
One way. And now we're making these one-way streets two-way streets, basically. And it makes...
Because the solar power can be fed back into the
correct.
Grid.
That's correct.
Okay.
And now it makes things considerably more complicated. And along with that complication come safety issues. Mm-hmm. That solar panel and inverter will be producing power and feeding it back onto the system even when there's no utility supply out there. So people maintaining the system are going to be subjected to those hazards, and that's a big concern. So the way you counter that concern is with the design of the system. You make sure that the system disconnects from the grid when the grid is de-energized. Now, that being said, since the home and its solar panels are separate from the grid, with proper design, you could be furnishing power to the house independent of the grid during those conditions. But that makes for a more complicated installation.
And more expensive.
More complicated control system, and complicated means expensive. That's absolutely right.
Okay. Would just having a backup generator then be a more cost-effective and efficient way of making sure you have power during a power outage?
Well, I think in terms of, upfront dollars, the answer is yes. But, solar should be really viewed as a long-term solution. And when you look at it in the long term, you see a lot of attractiveness there. One of the biggest shortcomings of solar energy is the fact that you can't control the sun. I mean, the sun is going to be out when the sun is out, and it's going to be unavailable sometimes at the wrong times. Mm-hmm. That sort of leads you into the idea of energy storage. Energy storage has a lot of challenges associated with it. But another way to counter this is to supplement the solar with a fossil fuel source like natural gas. So that way you can look at that solar facility and you can count on a certain output consistently. Hopefully it will come from the sun, but if the sun becomes unavailable, then it will come from the natural gas. But you can look at that source as being a very reliable provider of energy.
We're talking about the promise and the prognosis of renewable energy in Florida. Our guests are Dr. Ralph Fair, a power systems expert and electrical engineering instructor at the University of South Florida. Susan Glickman is the Florida director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And Dr. Rick Garrity is the former director of the Hillsborough County Environmental Protection Commission. I'm Robin Sussingham. We'll be right back. I'm Robin Sussingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. Today we're talking about how it might be possible to have our state powered by more renewable energy. Susan Glickman, the utilities use solar in the solar farms, which are also called solar photovoltaic plants. What do those look like physically?
They look very similar to the solar that would be on your roof as well. They have a racking system, so they're up off the ground a little bit. And then some of them track the sun. It just depends on, sort of how they devise the plan for the solar. So it's just a field with a lot of solar voltaic panels. So, and that's not dissimilar to what the solar looks like on a residential roof. And rooftop can be commercial. And if anyone has ever driven on Interstate 4 from Tampa to Orlando, you see, rows and rows of warehouses with just roofs sitting there soaking up the sun on most days. And those are a great opportunity to put up solar. So the trick is are we going to have solar that's only owned and controlled by the utilities? And Southern Alliance for Clean Energy strongly supports lots of utility scale solar, and we're very happy to see Tampa Electric that's going to be adding 600 megawatts, and Duke Energy is going to be putting 700 megawatts. But those are very big systems. But I just got last week through the solar co-op solar installed on my home. It's 10.
Well, you just did.
I absolutely did.
Just made that step.
Yes.
And you've been with this alliance for a while.
Well, yes.
That's
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and as I said, the cost has come down.
Mm-hmm.
We've had in the last year a 110% increase in residential solar permits here in the state of Florida. So Rick described it very well between the cost coming down and the tax credits. But I will be paying for my system within 5 years. So that means I essentially get 20 years of free electricity. And the batteries, which are becoming more developed, certainly we are mostly familiar with Elon Musk and Tesla's Powerwall battery, and those are starting to become more available, and the cost of that will come down.
But that's the big expense is the energy storage for when the sun isn't out and you still need power, you need to buy those batteries.
It is, and energy storage is a complicated thing. It's not easily scalable. Storing a small amount of energy is a pretty simple thing to do. And then when you get to very large systems, utility-scale systems, energy storage there becomes a huge challenge. And it's not just a matter of technology. I mean, you're bumping into laws of physics from time to time. I mean, there are going to be some obstacles that you're never going to get around. There are going to be others that will work themselves out as technology develops. But energy storage in general is quite a challenge. That's why, the hybrid systems have a lot of appeal, because that takes a lot of the emphasis off of the storage.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't need to store it because you have another way
source
of generating. I wanted to talk a little bit more about those solar farms, because there is something going on right now in Polk County in a small town, Lake Alfred, where a citrus family in Lake Alfred had 300 acres. They hadn't really been able to sell the price they wanted, and they want to sell it for a solar farm. And the county commission said no. The city council said no, because a lot of the homeowners around there didn't like the idea. They felt like it would lower their property values. So, Rick, tell me what you think about that.
Yes, the Lake Alfred situation is where TECO wants to build 600 megawatts of solar power, but they're not doing it in one place. They're probably going to do it in about 10 different sites. So they found a 300-acre parcel in Lake Alfred.
Former citrus grove,
and sounds like a good site. However, the city council has a problem with it because they're thinking that it would be better used as a residential development, even though I don't think they've had many takers on using it in that form. At least that's what the present owners are saying, is that they really can't sell it presently for residential. But it's an example. Land use issues are always going to be problems.
But when I hear about problems like they had in Lake Alfred, which is, on a small scale, but that's the human scale, where people say, I don't know about having 3 acres of panels next to me. What's that going to do for my property values? What's that going to do for wildlife? I wonder, the effort that's going into these renewable energies like solar, which is right now such a small part of the portfolio, What about that political effort and that money and that time going into making what we are using for energy right now, like coal, more safe, or natural gas? Why not try, and right now they have what they call clean coal, where they can do carbon dioxide sequestration so you don't get the carbon dioxide emissions. Why not put some of the effort into something that's really producing already over 20% of our power?
You're always going to have pollution from those fuels. Solar power is pollution-free. Once you implement it, it's pretty much maintenance-free. And I think it has the greatest potential of all of those fuels for the future in Florida.
Susan.
This issue of the traditional fuels that we've used, the imperative is the greenhouse gas emission problem. And, of course, coal, you know, is sort of the worst, the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. And they really have not figured out how to do this sort of coal gasification, capturing the carbon and injecting it, you know, beneath the ground. There was discussion about that some years ago.
I think there have been some successes in that area. I've been reading about that for maybe 15 years now.
Not in our area, because we have a very porous geology.
But let me get back to a point that Rick made. He said that solar energy is pollution-free. Ralph, do you see it as completely pollution-free?
Well, I'm not sure anything is pollution-free. Once the system is installed and operational, it's not emitting any greenhouse gases to the environment. But you have to look at the entire life cycle of those panels. The manufacturing of the panels is a energy-intensive process. It's also a pretty environmentally damaging process.
In what way?
Well, the manufacturing techniques and the materials used. Talking about battery storage, you see the same thing. You know, we can build batteries to store energy, but those batteries are going to be using materials, metals that are, you know, hazardous to the environment. So that involves the mining, the refining, the manufacturing of this material. And then when the battery's life is over, there has to be some sort of a recycling program for those batteries. It can't end up in the landfill. So there's a much bigger, more complex picture to look at than just the system while it's in service.
And we've been talking about solar, but according to the United States Energy Information Administration, biomass provides the largest share of Florida's renewable energy. How does energy generation from biomass work? Is this something that, Susan, your organization is involved with at all?
The term biomass encompasses a technology which is called waste to energy, and it's essentially burning garbage.
So they use waste from the sugarcane industry, from the citrus industry, all this plant material.
Just
garbage.
Garbage. And the city of Tampa owns a waste to energy facility. So that's where that number comes from. So as you mentioned, about 2% of Florida's energy needs are met with renewables, but it's only 0.36% that's actually met with solar. So that's why I distinguish that, because of these waste to energy facilities.
That does seem like a polluter.
There are some emissions. It's gotten better over the years, like a lot of other things have in terms of emissions, but it is not a completely clean source.
And with garbage, it's a trade-off. You have to get rid of it in some way. Either you bury it in lined landfills or you burn it and make energy from it. So you take the trade-off right now. The local governments have decided to go with the burning and generating electricity method, but they do have to comply with very stringent air pollution requirements.
We have to do a lot of different things to meet our energy needs. The first thing we need to do is to conserve and to be as efficient and use the most efficient appliances, and we have not done a very good job
that. On your website, energy efficiency is the cleanest and most cost-effective way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and other pollutants.
That's right. And then you make your buildings more efficient, or you build zero-energy homes, and then as you add solar, and as I said, the cost for the batteries are coming down. I recognize that there are life cycle costs to everything, but I will put up the battery and learning how to dispose of those safely with the kinds of pollutants that you get out of a coal-fired power plant, and then the impacts that our planet is dealing with greenhouse gas emissions.
So solar sounds great, you know, very little pollution. The sun's shining a lot. What's in the way, Ralph? Why aren't we using solar instead of natural gas and coal and nuclear?
Well, there are a few ways to look at this. The one drawback is if solar is going to replace a substantial portion of our energy, electrical energy production, we're going to have to combine it with some sort of a storage mechanism. And the storage becomes a complicated part of the problem. You also have to look at the type of solar that you use. There's a big difference between rooftop solar and utility scale solar, because utility scale solar, from a power system perspective, looks just like a coal plant. You know, if you have a 500 megawatt solar facility or a 500 megawatt coal facility, it's 500 megawatts being injected into the grid at one location, and the system has to deal with that. Rooftop solar has the ability to be distributed, and that can be a huge benefit, because now instead of producing the energy, let's say in Polk County, and then moving it to Tampa for consumption, we can make the energy, the electricity, where it needs to be used. That takes the burden off of the transmission and distribution systems, and ultimately that could reduce the cost of energy delivery considerably.
This is where your co-ops come in.
Yeah, exactly. I think solar has been kind of complicated to the average homeowner to understand and to try to find an installer, and there's so many questions that you look at and the different types of panels you should use, and there's a lot of different technical questions to overcome. That's the beauty of our co-ops, is that we help the homeowners do that.
Susan.
Florida is one of only four states where the law prohibits anyone other than your own government-assigned utility from selling electricity. So the main point is the reason that we don't have more solar in Florida is because of the way our policy has been structured. And we've had some changes recently with an amendment that passed on the 2016 ballot to reduce taxes on solar. And there are concerns about the idea of net metering, and that's when you feed the energy back to the grid. Our current net metering rule is such that utilities have to credit you a retail rate, which is the rate that you pay when you feed the energy back onto the grid. And at the end of the year, they'll true it up, and then they actually credit you a wholesale rate if you generate anything more than you use. So that policy in other states has been, you know, attacked, and there have been some reductions. But we are concerned that, as we've seen in other states, that policies will change to make punitive measures and charges on solar customers.
So that's it for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Ralph Fair, a power systems expert and electrical engineering instructor at the University of South Florida, Susan Glickman, the Florida director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and Dr. Rick Garrity, former director of the Hillsborough County Environmental Protection Commission. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
And we'd love to hear from you. Share your questions and comments on solar power with us on Facebook, tweet us at Florida Matters, or email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini. The engineer is George Gauvin. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.